Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
You know, if we could do comprehensive immigration legislation, that'd be great. I'll take it comprehensive. I'll take it piecemeal. In this case, I think it's easier just to move this as a standalone piece because of the kids that are protected now that would lose that protection soon if we don't act.
We're also doing everything we can to make sure that we have lined up private support for students, for these generous individuals who want to see these students be able to continue their education. We're making sure that students have every support possible, and we're putting into place a series of contingency plans.
What we're doing as community to protect ourselves is to know our rights and to make sure that the people know that they're not alone.
Maricopa County's results for the Save Our Schools ballot referenda is that it's a mathematical guarantee for it to make the ballot, obviously pending any litigation that may or may not be coming, or however it works to support with what's been filed so far.
And here with us to discuss the impact of the DACA program going away potentially in 6 months, along with an initiative going to the ballot to block school voucher expansion, our former lawmaker Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Welcome, guys. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to be here.
All right, Stan, let's start with DACA. And there's a lot to talk about. Mark and I have done a lot of conversations this week covering the gamut. But from a political standpoint, what kind of position has President Trump with lawmakers in?
The position they should be in. That's what's exciting about it. I don't give Trump much credit for political strategy. He's just kind of his own phenomenon. But this idea of a Republican president saying to the world, look, we don't make laws by presidents extending their hand forth and declaring something, no matter how righteous it may be. So I'm not going to let this thing continue. I am going to just throw on a few months of it to make everybody feel good, and I'm going to ask Congress to give me a bill, which I will sign. I thought that was an excellent way to thread the needle in this very complicated issue.
And I think outside of the politics, there's really some big personalities not personalities, but personal stories that need to be told. You know, you've heard a lot about the 800,000 DACA recipients across the nation, but there are 28,000 of those young men and women here in Arizona. And these are overwhelmingly individuals who are at work or at school and who are American in every way except their legal status. And I think that this political situation needs to exist beyond more than just using these, you know, fantastic young men and women as political pawns. And I think it's really time to see some action from all sides of the political spectrum.
You know, I think it's interesting that this action could have come any time in the last decade or better. And Democrats have had Congress, had the presidency, didn't. But now I get the feeling that all is going to end well, that the politics seems to have rounded the corner on it, and Republicans are out loud actually saying, I can do this. I want to do this.
Well, I'm wondering, Stan, because I was wondering before you said what you just said, you know, this is what Congress should be doing, but they haven't done it for years and years and years. I'm wondering if in some way the fact that President Obama created this program, and did that in some way bring it enough to the fore where enough members of Congress, both Democrat and Republican, are willing to actually legislatively do something
about
this?
Yeah, I think when the history is written on it, your point's well made, that after President Obama said for years that he didn't have the power to do it, then eventually did do it, it raised the whole perspective of the average voter who now is sympathetic in a very deep way to the plight of these young people. And so now that was my turn the corner analogy. I think now the public's ready. Congress, which is fine-tuned to whatever the public is ready to make that happen.
And I think the public has been ready for quite a long time, for a decade and a half, as Stan mentioned, since this idea kind of first surfaced. But I think it's still very much an open question that Congress is ready because they have a full plate. Obviously, they have just been taking votes on the Harvey package today before they go home to their constituents. But, you know, when they come back, there's tax reform. There's a whole menu of other things that they need to take on before that. And, you know, any signal that the president sends forward on this, I think, can be met with some skepticism because this is a man who started off his campaign calling Mexicans rapists and that, you know, the entire country doesn't send their best. So any effort of goodwill is kind of clouded by his actions and his words in the past.
We started the segment with a soundbite, Sam, from Senator Jeff Flake, who was part of the so-called Gang of Eight with comprehensive immigration reform. And he actually dared to use that phrase, comprehensive immigration reform. Right. Is there any reason to think, with the way things are set up right now, that there'd be some advance to that? Because there's even talk of somehow tying Dreamers and the Dream Act and DACA and whatnot to the border wall.
Yeah, you know, I think that we might see some of those conversations continue to take place. But I just want to highlight that you used the phrase, that Senator Flake dared to use that phrase. And I think that what we need to see from our elected leaders, Senator Flake included, is him to dare more than just phrases. There's been a lot of words. He stayed at home and mowed his lawn during the presidential campaign, and now he's written a book. But we need to see some real action, and not just from him, but the entire delegation. This is an issue where in the past, Senator McCain and Senator Flake have been leading voices, but we need those voices to turn into action. And that's imperative.
I'll tell you what's changed the game is this recent Trump deal on the budget and the debt ceiling and all that with Schumer and Pelosi, leaving the Speaker and the Majority Leader of the Senate with their pants around their ankles, just wondering what the heck happened. That has changed everything. I think the Republicans now realize this president can go anywhere on the scale and will go anywhere. And a deal on DACA, a deal on any of these other big, important items, I think all of a sudden it's all possible now.
But given the president's talking repeatedly of a wall and of immigration controls and border security, that's clearly one of his priorities. Do you think that he would be opposed, perhaps, to having a bill dealing with DACA recipients that is tied to funding for a border wall? Would he insist on it?
No, we haven't heard him insist on it yet, and I'm sure he wouldn't be opposed to it. I believe, what do I know? I'm sitting in Phoenix, Arizona. I believe he'd sign a DACA-only bill or a DACA inside some other unrelated bill. And I don't think he's going to leverage the wall with DACA. I think he's going to leverage the wall with future budget votes, debt ceiling votes, that sort of thing. And back to my original point, which I think is an important one, the Congress that used to be every road passed through Paul Ryan's office. Now Ryan's wondering where the majority really is and what it can do and how he faces voters back home and all of those things.
Yeah, being Speaker of the House is not a lot of fun these days. We saw John Boehner go through this as well. I want to pivot, Mark, a little bit from DACA. And I want to talk a little bit later. We'll obviously talk about the Save Our Schools ballot initiative and whatnot. But since we're talking about congressional votes, Sam, let me start with you on this. There's Andy Biggs sort of stood alone to some extent when it came to Hurricane Harvey relief. He was one of only three people in the House to actually vote against that. There have been some other votes since then. What kind of point, and Stan, as an East Valley person who's been a lawmaker, I want your take on this as well. What do you think Andy Biggs is trying to do here?
You know, I've had the opportunity to work at the state legislature when he was Senate president, and in some ways this is not surprising at all. He was single-handedly the reason why the restoration of the Kids Care program that now offers health care to 25,000 children in Arizona took so long to pass was because he had these ideological reasons why he didn't think that the government should help people, in essence. And, you know, so he was one of the three people that voted against it for really no other reason than to make an ideological point.
Stan, does he fit that district, considering how close
Christine
Jones came?
Okay. He does. The legislature, at Sam's point, is made up of self-nominated individuals. Many of them, most of them, no matter what party, are what I label true believers. They're actually authentic individuals who believe what they believe. Congress is not that body. Right. Congress is made up of politically ambitious guys that don't want to work and love the power and everybody kissing their rear end, all those sort of things. People that can raise money or spend their own money. Andy Biggs is a rare, rare individual in Congress. I think he's kind of a reluctant congressman. And he's not going to do the things congressmen do in order to gain popularity within the game. It's good for us, bad for us. We have a genuine, authentic, true-believing individual in Andy Biggs. He'll never be able to get a dang thing done for the state of Arizona or for his district because he's going to quickly be relegated as one of those, and everyone will work around him.
Mark, let me jump in just for one. I recall that when you ran for Congress, I remember you ran against someone that you said the same thing, that person should have been bringing stuff back. That person's now a U.S. Senator, Jeff Flake.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that to your listeners' attention. An ambush right here on live radio. No, you're right. I have the same both admiration and criticism of Jeff Flake. Neither Jeff Flake nor Andy Biggs will ever vote for a dollar of appropriation. You can bet on it because they don't want to have to explain it. I find that a negative. I mean, the Harvey vote, personally, Andy should have voted yes. But I get why he voted no. And so if you love a purist in that very unpure world, he's your guy. If you want somebody that actually can make things happen in reality with how we govern ourselves in the United States of America, he's not your guy.
And I think if you see what happened in Pennsylvania, Representative Charlie Dent announced that he's going to retire. And in his announcement, he mentioned that he was part of the governing wing of the GOP. I don't think that either Representative Biggs or Senator Flake have had a history in the House of ever being confused as part of the governing wing.
Stan, it's interesting that you use the word purity, because I think in politics, especially in party politics, that's a word that gets thrown out a lot now, that are you purely on the left or purely on the right? Are you willing to work with the other? Do you maybe deign to work with the other side? Is it a good thing to have purists like that in Congress, which is a body that is tasked, to Sam's point, with governing?
Yeah, I think they can provide a useful service for all of us watching this play out. And more importantly, for their colleagues within the game. Andy is immediately going to be one of those people that a big block of Republican conservatives declare as the lodestar of where we should or should not be on if we had this thing all to ourselves and there were enough of us to do what we want to do. And that will help gravitate that body toward that kind of policy. That ain't bad, especially if you want the outcome to be in the center right space like I do. So Andy can act as a sort of gravitational pull to bring that over. That's not bad. But in traditional politics, we like our congressman to be able to get the bridge built or bring something back or get the right, you know, Boeing to do something else here. And that's a guy that is trading favors and doing the kind of things in self-governance is natural, and I don't find abhorrent. But Andy can't or won't do that. Neither will Jeff Flake, to your bigger point. Mm-hmm.
That's Stan Barnes. Also here is Sam Richard. It is the news cap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ. Much more to come in our conversation. Stay with us. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix, along with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap with Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Sam, let's move on to Save Our Schools. Big signature push to make sure that we could block some action by the legislature related to expanding school vouchers. Well,
right.
Looks like that's going to make the ballot. What do you think goes on from here?
It definitely cleared all the hurdles it needed to from a functional standpoint. Over 115,000 signatures that an amazing group of volunteers that were filled with passion and, frankly, a lot of knowledge about the intricacies of this issue led the charge. And now it's cleared all the hurdles. It's had unprecedented rates of qualifications as when the signatures are sent to the counties. The opposition, which I guess is the support side of the push for the expansion of school vouchers, are mounting legal challenges. But I think that there's a pretty well understood belief that these are just grasping at straws, that they're really trying to be nitpicky, and there's really not a lot of standing for the legal arguments that these folks are making.
Stan, do you expect the legislature to get involved, especially if, as Sam's predicting, the courts choose not to?
I do. I haven't given it a lot of thought. I don't have a dog directly in that fight in my professional life. But as I think about the topic, the legislature believes that's going to be on the ballot, and the Republicans that run the legislature, I should say, believe that's going to be on the ballot, and is going to draw out a different kind of a constituency, particularly in the big reelection cycle with the governor on the ballot and all that sort of thing. I think they'll exercise their power and they'll wrap themselves into saving the voters the trouble and giving the opponents to the voucher expansion what they want. We're going to give you what you want. We're just going to end the whole thing. And they'll wait another day and they'll sneak up and do it again, because it's been in the playbook of the conservative element in Arizona for a long time. I love this as a political science experiment in Arizona. It's really fascinating to watch this play out.
Would you expect them to wait a year to reintroduce the expansion, or do you think they repeal it and then, you know, a week or two later, maybe at the end of the session, throw a strike everything amendment together and try to redo it at the last minute?
Yeah, I don't think they will do that, because it would be viewed as so cynical that I don't think they can get 31-16 to do that. I think certain members would, But these are members that are you couldn't blast them out of their own district, so they'd be willing. But others, no way.
And, you know, Stan mentioned 3116, and those are the majorities in either chamber, and that was the bare minimum that this bill initially got when it got through. And it was hours and hours of debate and behind the scenes arm twisting. So if they had to work that hard to get to 31 and 16 the first time, I just don't see their path to get there to do this repeal and replace that people are worried about, because you better believe that the Save Our Schools folks are ready and waiting in the wings to re-turn up that machine and get things going.
Sam, you referenced the volunteers that collected signatures on this, and I'm wondering if that in some ways, in the success of that effort, at least collecting signatures and having them validated, does that diminish the argument that some were making earlier in the year about another effort the legislature did, which was to change the way that petition circulators are paid? A lot of people were saying that this is the end of the citizens initiative movement because nobody can afford to do this. They did this with paying nobody.
So they didn't pay anybody until the last week or so. They added some things to kind of add to their cushion, but they definitely cleared the hurdle that they needed to as volunteers. But I think that very rarely are we going to find an issue that drives this much passion and energy and excitement around that. So there are, issues like dog fighting or public smoking that might find a reason to be on the ballot through a citizen initiatives, but aren't necessarily going to get thousands of volunteers from all across the state to pick up clipboards on the weekend and go out and talk to their neighbors.
Yeah, I find that a good phenomenon. The idea that you could have an issue and you have a lot of money so you could buy your way onto the ballot with a question that you've drafted, I never have liked that. That just seems like populism gone crazy, and the idea that there is a relief valve for a legislature that's just reluctant. In this Save Our Schools regime, no matter where you sit on it, the idea that they could get enough people to engage is a testament to that being a good program. So I like that, and to your point, Mark, I think they did prove that the sky isn't going to fall, that issues can be done that are legitimate and not necessarily just purchased to be there.
Stan, we're more than a year away from the next election day, but I do wonder, when it comes to K-12, when it comes to funding, when it comes to the governor's position on this kind of thing, I think people would still think Governor Ducey is a major favorite to be reelected, but how could this affect things down ballot? The fact that there was this citizens movement, the fact that K-12 funding, almost everyone seems to be on board with doing something about that.
Yeah, I think I agree with your premise. This is a center-right state, and this governor is a center-right governor, and the two challengers so far on the Democratic side are both terrific human beings, but no one can name them. They won't have they have less money, less natural voters, and so this ought to be Doug Ducey's reelection should he want to. The trouble is that there have been so many black swan events in politics recently that I think it keeps him up a little bit. He teed himself up in his State of the State speech as the education guy, and he went through that surprise list that was so long that had a great big impact on the news cycle that day and permeated a lot of people, said, wow. And then whatever happened, I think some of the people that care about those issues felt let down, even betrayed. That has mobilized them. It's given the issue to talk about to Democrats that is meatier than normal. And if you put things like the Save Our Schools thing on the ballot and the advent of corporate donations and out-of-state money, you might have a bad storm, even if you are a very well-liked center-right Republican incumbent.
And I mean, the governor stumbled a little bit in his response to the Arpaio pardon. He stumbled a little bit with DACA and you know, his commitment to supporting these 28,000 young people in Arizona. So you add that on top of 118,000 individuals who are engaged enough to say that they did not agree with his stance on K-12 education. I think that, definitely he's very much a favorite to win his reelection. But I don't think it's necessarily a foregone conclusion. And like you said, it is a year out, so I don't think it's that surprising that anybody doesn't know the name of Senator Steve Farley and David Garcia, who are the two Democratic primary opponents for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. But I think there's a lot of time for things to develop, and people are more engaged, as you know, looking at your listener numbers, I'm sure, in the news and what's happening in current events. So I think that all of that could be exactly the perfect storm that Stan's talked about.
Mark, I want to wrap up the segment. And Stan, let me start with you on this. So Jeff DeWitt, We're not really sure whether he's running for re-election for state treasurer or not, but apparently he really likes Kimberly Yee to succeed him and said some not great things about Tom Farris, currently of the Corporation Commission. Although the Corporation Commission's been such an easy target at this point, a pinata. What do you think about what's Jeff DeWitt's future? Does he run for Senate? Does he run for Treasurer again?
I would be just wildly speculating, like you.
That's only one minute in the segment.
That's why we
go for it.
When I see him, when I talk to him in person, I get the feeling he's very much enjoyed himself, but that he's really not running again, like he said originally. And I also think he's not running for the Senate. I mean, I guess if I had to lay my money down, I would think he would not run for anything and either go back to his private life or perhaps actually go work for the Trump administration. That's my safe gander, but I have really no idea about it.
And Sam, on that first, but is there a good Democratic challenger there potentially?
I think that the field is still forming. As we mentioned earlier, there's still a year away to go. So names will come to the surface. But I think that this is a great way to keep both of those names in the forefront of everybody's mind. We're talking about Senator Kim Yee right now. We're talking about Jeff DeWitt. And who knows what they're going to do. I mean, Senator Yee might be the next Senate president. And this is a great way to keep her name relevant and at the top of mind as we barrel towards 2018.
There hasn't been a Democrat treasurer in the state of Arizona since I think 1948.
So you're not predicting that.
No, I'm not. They probably won't even put anybody up.
I'm glad Stan said it so I didn't have to.
Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting, Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, thanks for joining us for the NewsCap.
You bet.
Thanks. And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.